Welcome to the Gospel Rain Podcast, part of the teaching ministry of Dr. Matt Brown and Dr. Micah Carter. We're glad you've joined us today for gospel-centered conversations of two like-minded pastors who want to see the gospel of Christ reign in the hearts of God's people. We would love to hear your feedback and your questions. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/gospelrain or go to @gospelrain on Twitter. We hope you will find gospel-centered answers to your questions about theology and the Christian life. And now, we welcome you to the Gospel Rain Conversation.
It's a delight to be back on the Gospel Rain Podcast. I'm sitting here with Matt, and we're excited about today's episode, Masculinity. And it's an important conversation in our culture. It's an important issue for the church, especially for those of us in leadership and for those of us raising up young sons and young men in the context of the church. We're also delighted to have a call-in guest with us today, John Lovell. John is the lead tactics and firearms instructor for Telluric Group in Georgia. He teaches a whole bunch of different types of classes, night vision, pistol, rifle, defense, all kinds of other neat tactical classes and more at Telluric Group. He's a war veteran. He served with the Army Rangers in Special Operations, 2nd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, did many combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. John is a man's man. He's a man who loves the Lord, and he served as a missionary for a number of years in Costa Rica, and is a very smart, well-read, and spiritual guy. He's got a great family. Love his wife, Rebecca, and his two sons, Sons of Thunder, John Lucas and Judah. John, welcome to the Gospel Rain Podcast.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
So we're going to kind of jump right in and let you talk a little bit at the start about the Warrior Poet Society. Okay, so you have a website, and you do quite a bit of different things on the website and through what you like to do related to Warrior Poet Society. Tell us a little bit about that and what it is and what it does.
Sure. Mainly I'm putting stuff out on YouTube. So if you put my name in YouTube or Warrior Poet Society, John Lovell, whatever, it just pops up. But we're dealing with all kinds of different issues. The idea of a warrior poet is somebody with a careful, calculating mind. They have a heart of conviction and character, and then they have hands skilled in violence. So it's because we love people, we make careful plans so we could defend them when need be, and we train to that end. So that's kind of the whole idea of a warrior poet, and as such, cover all kinds of different issues, and some of it's going to be like theology stuff, God and gunfighting and how it relates. Some of it's going to be philosophical. Some of it's going to be historical, covering the great warrior poets of the past. Some of it's going to be kind of gun and gear reviews. Here's the best gun and why. Here's the best tactical flashlight, etc. Here's medical kits and whatnot. Here's some civilian tactics, how to survive a lethal encounter, an active shooter, or things like that. Some of it's me telling war stories while shooting targets intermittently. Yes. So, here's how to hold a pistol. And so there's a whole wide range that's kind of all encompassing of what it means to be a warrior poet. And I'm excited to cover this subject, masculinity, because I think it's something that's missed, and I almost jumped right in.
Yeah.
So I won't anticipate what's coming. I'll shut up and let you do your thing now.
I think that's great, man. And I have benefited probably as many as most, or as many as any, from your skill and experience. And most of the years that you and I have spent time together, we've danced around topics of theology and warfare and all kinds of other things. So I'm delighted, man, that you get to jump in and talk about masculinity for our listeners. Let's do it. Let's jump in. I'll throw a question out there, and maybe Matt will chime in just a minute. But When we think about masculinity from the world's perspective, we'll talk about biblical masculinity later, but from the world's perspective, what does the world, how does it define what a man is in our culture?
Cool. I feel like I'm the door kicker guy, and you are a huge brained theologian, and I feel so foolish answering a question. I feel like, well, why you tell me? You're the brain. anyway, you did ask. So I see it as kind of two sides of a spectrum. It's kind of like a pendulum effect. There's two versions of a man in the United States today. One of them is in a very feminine version. We've taken some very feminine virtues, which are very good, and I think guys should have them as, you know, kind of a secondary, not as a primary force, and really have exalted them to what it means to be a guy. We want guys that are very, very sensitive and very, very in touch with their feelings. I don't want to go to the other side of the spectrum and say, you know, we're all John Wayne-ish, there are no feelings, and all of that ooey-gooey love stuff is utter nonsense. We don't want to swing from one side of the pendulum all the way over the other, but there seems to be some great exaltation that the great pinnacle of manhood now is to be really sensitive, very, very sweet, funny, very polite. And it's something like that. There's not a lot of praise. Like, where's boldness
right
in the modern American male? And then there's the other side of the spectrum as well. That is kind of that rough and gruff, hardcore, almost kind of like a machine type dude, unfeeling and just rough and gruff. And even just the concept of a warrior poet, you have the warrior, rough and gruff, and you have the poet, the great lover of people, to be reconciled into. So really, when I'm talking warrior poets, I'm just talking good masculinity. It should already be there. It's not a new construct. It's just using a catchy term as a catch-all for what I think masculinity always was supposed to be and what it is now. Not that women can't be warrior poets, but I digress. Back to you.
All right. Hey, John, this is Matt. I'm listening to you, and I'm really intrigued. I like the distinction you're making between some of these things. Do you think that masculinity as a whole, not just physical elements, do you think that's under attack in our culture in 2017 as we face it in the church?
It may not be under attack, just for the matter of that it's already completely dead.
Wow, that's an insightful answer.
This is, you know, I'm kind of speaking in hyperbole here. Yeah, I do think it's under attack, but I felt like being a little more sensationalistic and doomsday-ish. Just because I do see it as dire. We're the most feministic nation, the most feministic time in the history of the world. That's not a hard thing to say. Just a simple kind of look at history would show that. And you know, I think we can all fall into the problem of what C.S. Lewis would call like kind of historical snobbery.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're more advanced, everyone else was idiots, and we finally got it right. But I'm just saying the way we view the world, masculinity, femininity. I mean, we can't even decide what bathrooms to use anymore.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
It seems like gender in general is under attack. It's not as simple to just be, hey, all right, chicks over here, dudes over here. All right, XY chromosome, check. Nope, we got some 70-something crazy gender. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Even the whole idea of gender in general is completely under attack.
Yeah.
Which is ludicrous. It's just this, political correct. Anyway,
You know, John, you also have a pretty epic beard, a little Greco-Roman kind of thing going there, which I like. tell me about the resurgence of the beard in the culture and how many people are really trying to equate that with a resurgence of masculinity, just in the term of people growing beards. And for those of us beardless people who can't actually grow a full beard, neither Matt nor I can, so we have a goatee. Does that mean our testosterone is that much less and then therefore we're that much less men?
It just means that you're inferior to me in every way, Dr. Carter. When I'm around you, I don't like you to look directly in my eyes.
Right.
Like the beta male, you must look at the floor when you're in my presence. so dumb. I just finished reading a bio by Alexander the Great. Nobody's going to question this dude's salt as a soldier and warrior and, you know, a But anyway, I didn't have a beard. You don't need a beard. It's a lot of it is really superficial kind of stuff. It's a facade of masculinity, thinking we're men because we like guns and we got beards and we got some tattoos. And that's just such a superficial form of masculinity. And it really depends on how you define masculinity. Me, for instance, what masculinity is, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, but it's good character. It's being a good protector and provider, taking responsibility. It's loving others with a deep affection. It's also physical toughness. It's mental toughness. It's spiritual, and mental and spiritual toughness is outrageously more important in the realm of toughness than the physical, especially in today's world as well. Mm-hmm. We're not solving most of our problems with clubs in we're supposed to talk our problems out, and that's a real big deal. So anyway, all those variables come together. How well you perform vocationally, how well you're raising your kids and reading with them and romancing your wife, those are all aspects of what make a man. To me, and to fail direly in any one of those categories is a huge chink. And masculinity is too sacred and too all-encompassing to reduce it to the fact that, well, he's got an epic beard and a big bench press. Man, that might be the weakest man you've ever met.
Right.
With his 400-pound bench press and his Viking beard, that might be the saddest excuse for a male walking through the state.
Well,
that means absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah.
I can see some very, very manly looking men that are basically big children. So.
Yeah, I think that, man, you really laid the definition out there extremely well. And so let me kind of turn this toward the church then. And I agree with you. I think what you've outlined is actually a biblical perspective on masculinity in all the realms you just defined, you know, protecting, providing, all of those things, emotional health, mental health, that kind of stuff. So then why is then the church, why has it been collapsing into a more feminine feel, and men are, you know, mostly AWOL out there in the church life? It's not a universal truth, but it is common. If the Bible's portrait of a man is what it is, then why does the church seem to be lagging behind in biblical masculinity?
Man, you asked me that question. I'm like, ooh, that's a great question. I'd love to ask my friend Micah about it, but you're him.
Let me throw something out there. Tease.
You would ask me, so you're probably leading me too. Like,
I am.
I'm going to give you some limp-wristed answer, and then you're going to come in like a baller and just say this epic, wonderful answer. And then I'm stuck thinking, like, man, why can't I be as smart as Micah?
Yeah, hey, John, I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see it happen. So you go ahead with your answer, and I want to see what Micah's got to come back with.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have an answer. But let me go down a little bit of a rabbit trail, just slightly, just kind of like a feeling that I get when I even approach this issue of masculinity and the church. And that's this. I noticed it years ago, just as a younger, more passionate Christian, want to get in there and read some good stuff, learn some stuff about God and being a better Christian man. And so going into a Christian bookstore a number of years ago, just a young Christian, hungry, wanting to get some good material, and know my background kind of in my context is, I'm an alpha, meat eater. I'm a ex-vet, war vet, ops guy. But walking in, it's kind of you're immediately hit by this fresh smell of potpourri, and this very calm elevator music. There's about 285 Thomas Kincaid paintings adorning every nook and cranny of it. There's rainbows and butterflies and neat little whatever. And you know, of my idea, I grew up spiritually in the deserts of Afghanistan and the cities of Iraq, kicking in doors and doing business. Then I have my Bible in my rucksack as I'm reading and learning theology just straight from the Bible. So, Christianity and following Jesus has a very, very masculine feel of when God says, hey, I am a warrior, like a mighty man of war. The Lord marches out into battle and stirs up his zeal. I take that very, very literally, and I see the greatest worshiper in the Bible, David, was also its greatest warrior, killing his tens of thousands.
Right.
So what I'm itching for is a more complete version of Christianity that has something that I can really relate with other than another caterpillar stick with a little pithy Christian adage. I want a good bloody battle axe hanging over the threshold when I walk in, which is far more biblical.
With a Bible verse under it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't see butterflies, but I see bloody swords, double-edged swords everywhere. And I'd like to get a few of those.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just notice the whole feel. And generally, even in the church, boldness and that kind of, you know, tough, beat me to a bloody pulp while I proclaim Jesus kind of savagery Christianity, that brutal, stubborn, tough love of Christianity is kind of lost. And now it's been replaced with, we need to be really polite and kind. And I like to be polite. I'm not a jerk. I really love people. I want them to feel good. But I, you know, kind of the Martin Luther, the truth at all costs and peace if possible.
Yeah.
That resonates more with me.
Well,
I'm wired differently, and I don't find a place for guys like me much in many modern churches. And that's okay. I still love the church. I'm a part of it. But it do feel kind of like a man apart.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of an indictment. I think you hit the nail on the head. Well done, sir. Well done, sir, on the feminization of the church. That might be a larger topic elsewhere, Matt, and maybe even what does church leadership, as God outlined it in the Scripture, how does that also inform what's going on? I read a book when I was in seminary also by that title, The Feminization of the Church, and the concept was the music, everything has changed. For example, we sing one of the most famous choruses today is, I'm running to your arms, I'm running to your arms. And I'm looking out there in the face of some pretty manly dudes that would gut a deer in our presence right now and probably eat the liver without even cooking it. And they're standing there like, what the heck are we talking about? I'm going to run into your arms. And so I think we've bought into much of the lie of the culture that says masculinity is a problem. And, you know, the transgender, homosexual agendas in our culture, I think, are informing that. And that's a problem. So you talked about courage. Okay, I want to unpack that a little bit more. And then Matt, I think, has a follow-up question as well. Courage. So we can connect that to physical, you know, protection and stuff like that. But there's also a sense in which we need men to stand up with spiritual courage and, you know, and to lead in such a way that they're following Christ, you know, and not worried about what men might think. Can you talk about just kind of the realm of courage? And I think you used the term boldness in the church and how men need to lead out in that.
Sure. And just, you know, so I have a good, well-rounded term, and so everybody knows what I'm talking about. You kind of, when I talk warrior poet, because I'm catering to a lot of the gun world, I'm not using warrior and fighter and courage in as much of the metaphorical sense. It has a physical application. We are physical beings and we are spiritual beings. We're both. We're not one or the other. We're both, right? Do you agree, doctors?
Well, let me clarify one thing. One time you told me something about, and you're the specialist here, so I'll lead you and set it up for you to do this. But not everybody can do kind of what you do in the context of war. Meaning, you either have it or you don't. People are going to be paralyzed. They're going to be afraid. They're going to run. They're going to do a variety of things. But there's a certain type of person that is made and equipped to run to the fight, and it's almost like a hyper focus toward the right kind of thing physically. And I think that's an important application for a man leading his home, church, and everything else. But also, how can we apply that to a spiritual realm of running to disciplines in one's life, like prayer and Bible study, and the kind of example, not just to run into the fire of war, but run into the fire of spiritual war on behalf of our family and our church. Yeah. Make sense?
Yeah, and what I'm trying to kind of set up is hopefully for our listeners, I want to provide just kind of a realistic approach to, okay, well, courage, you have it or you don't, and how do I do it? You know, and trying to be like, hey, how can I take something away from here? And the reason I went to the physical as well is I'm just kind of saying of, I think because we're our physicality, there's something very physical about being spiritual. you know, I heard somebody say that and it really just stuck for me of, you know, if you're training in martial arts and stuff and learning and growing in physical courage, I think there's a spiritual carryover. If you're being spiritually courageous, as perfect love casts out all fear, 1 John. There is a physical carryover for there. So if you're practicing great spiritual courage, you love people with great abandon, you love them passionately. Well, if you love people perfectly, you're not going to fear your own death or torture. You're ready to be the perfect soldier. And therefore, your great spiritual courage immediately has a translation into great physical courage. So when I think about courage, it's a catch-all. I can't splice it up and say spiritual, mental, emotional, physical. All of them are integrally connected because I am spirit and I am physical. Anyway, to grow in one is to, in another way, contingently grow in all. Hmm. And that's just kind of how I see it. Maybe years down the road, I won't see it. Now, just so I wanted to just kind of preface it all with that and then jump into the spiritual courage now like you wanted me to. So yeah, the spiritual applications. I remember there's a guy I knew, a friend, and he had a superior that was over both of us. And this guy was a real meek guy. He wasn't a fighter either. He was, you know, just a very kind, sweethearted guy. Just to look at him, you wouldn't think masculine. You wouldn't think manhood. You wouldn't think courage. But man, I saw kind of a veil pull back and I'm like, dude, this guy is a lion.
Yeah.
And so that's still, I mean, I didn't plan on talking about it, but this, out of all the things I could tell you about courage and war, this stood out to me, maybe because it shocked me, but also because I had a very spiritual sense to it as well. I saw a great spiritual courage. Other spiritual courage pieces is having the it manifests itself, I think, in the spiritual disciplines as well. It has to do with whether you'll actually speak your mind and say the hard thing. You follow Jesus. Well, tell someone about it, man. Come on, quit being a coward. Tell somebody. Don't just roll over. Oh, my faith is spiritual. Shut up, man. Get out there. Say
exactly.
You know, there's a gospel here. Do you really believe it or not? Then say something, man. Mm. Man up.
Well, I like that, John. That speaks right to the heart of where I think a lot of our men are afraid to go to in church life right now. A lot of them may not understand the distinctions when we talk about courage, when it comes to sharing the gospel. Some men may not know the corollary there, that there is something to be said for a man who will stand up, be courageous, and go to people who are lost and say some things. In a culture right now where we're fighting and arguing so much, and people are telling us that, you know, the Christian view is, you know, out of date, out of line, not politically correct, and a lot of men are scared to say things. What you have said really speaks to the heart, I think, of where men are in our culture right now, that we need to be courageous, stand up and say something. So I think that's incredible. Thank you, John, for saying that.
Yeah, my pleasure. You can. I don't mean to just, you know, come off the handle and be, you know, so passionate, but I guess I am passionate about this. You know, it's kind of at the root. I'm seeing the family unit destroyed. And how can our nation possibly stand if all the nation or all the families topple? We're just a nation of families.
Right.
And so I see the destruction of what I love and have fought for, the families, my neighbors, my friends, all the listeners here. So anyway, of, and you know, the timing of this podcast comes at a pretty good time of, I'm really wanting to do stuff. I'm still just kind of brainstorming how to do this. I'll have something on the website soon, I'm sure.
Awesome.
But I'd love to be able to do kind of men's retreats where we let me teach you how to shoot and we'll do some tactics stuff, fun kind of masculine things, but have some of these talks as well. We're talking about biblical masculinity and whatnot. We'll sit over a campfire and you know, it'll be real organic and have kind of a firearms and snap necks and cash checks kind of skill set attached to it. But I had to say it because it rhymed. I don't
that's
even know what
beautiful.
The snap.
Snap
so,
necks and
anyway,
cash checks. I like that, man. That's good. That's
snapping good. Snapping necks and cashing checks. I don't know what that means, but it sounds awesome.
Well.
So anyway, I'm real excited to move into that in the future to kind of blend my profession and my ministry into one piece to help dudes out. But anyway, I'm thinking through that stuff now.
No, I think that's going to be a benefit to those men that will be able to do that with you and also to the church overall. You know, when you guys were talking about sharing the gospel and kind of connecting that to courage and masculinity, a scripture kept popping into my mind. It was 2 Timothy chapter 2, where Paul says to Timothy, his protege in the faith, endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. And if you're doing what your commanding officer, I'm paraphrasing now, commanding officer is telling you to do, you won't get entangled with civilian affairs. And then he goes down right after that and he says, remember Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, descended from David, according to my gospel. And he's saying, if you're going to hold this gospel, it is by necessity with a culture that is anti-God, anti-Christ, and the spirit of anti-Christ over all things, that you're going to have courage even to hold the gospel and hold the line for the gospel in this culture as a good soldier. So I thought that was a really
That's
timely
good.
Word.
John, let me switch gears. We have in our listening audience, we have a number of men that are in our churches, and we know that we have pastor friends of ours listening. We have a number of men who are listening to the podcast. What I want to do now is ask you if you can help us with something. As I was thinking about this conversation that we were going to have today, I wanted to find out from you, would you have any kind of practical suggestions for dads, or even moms, for that matter? I know we have a lot of single moms that are raising their boys, and you know, let me ask you this: would you have any practical suggestions for those parents to help develop and encourage the masculinity of our boys? Here's the reason I'm asking that: we live in the South, and where a lot of boys get raised hunting and fishing. Not everybody does, but it's prominent, maybe more so down south, doing guy things. You know, not every boy likes to fish or hunt, though. Is that all there is to developing masculinity? How can we help develop masculinity in our boys that may have different interests? And Mike and I were talking about, what do you do with the guys like us that are nerds? You know, that kind of thing. My question is, give us some practical suggestions to some of our parents of how they can help develop manhood in their boys.
So the first words I ever said to my oldest son, I held him up in the delivery room and just overcome with emotion and plan. And it just kind of the first thing that bubbled to the surface was I said, I'm going to teach you everything. and I meant it. It was a declaration. It just kind of rose up out of me. I think, you know, my desire is to disciple my children. You can't produce what you're not.
Right.
You know, you can't raise a man when you are, you know, a man. A river's not really rising higher than its source, you know.
And right, right.
This, they're going to become little copies of me, my strengths and weaknesses, and then they'll go on and develop differently. But that early development, that's just, if I'm a dude, they'll be good dudes too.
Right.
You know,
right.
And masculinity has different shapes. I really look up to you guys in terms of y'all's education is something I just kind of salivate over. To be able to know so much has so much value to me. You know, if you get the theology and the philosophy wrong, you can be as strong and as dumb as you want, and you're not going to be a good masculine
right,
man.
Right. That's
education
right.
is a pillar of this. You notice it even in the term warrior poet. my catch-all term that's kind of synonymous with just masculinity as it's supposed to be, as I see it in general, of, you know, carefully calculated, well-studied minds, a heart filled with conviction and character, and then, hands skilled in violence to deal with the warrior, attribute more. Hmm. So, anyway, of that educational aspects is critical, but for raising, you know, masculine boys, they don't have to be, my kids are really different. One looks like he's going to go into special operations and, you know, slay all of his enemies and come back. And then my youngest, I look at him and I'm like, and one day this one is going to make one woman very happy. They're very, very different. And I want to allow room for that. They don't have to like guns. I don't really care about that.
Right.
They're going to have different interests. That's great. I don't care. Masculinity is not this Tim the Tool Man Taylor of, oh, what it means to be a guy is you know how to fix cars. I don't know anything about fixing cars. I'm not handy at all.
Right.
I'm not. I suck at that. I'm just not good at that. Football. I know as much about football as your adolescent daughters. I don't know anything at sports. You know, I don't. I don't know. I don't care even.
That's awesome, though. That's good, though, that you're helping us with this, because I think there's confusion among men, especially in the church, as to what is a man? What is a man supposed to look like, and how am I supposed to, as a man, if I don't like all those things, how am I supposed to raise a man up where there's a confusion, not just in the culture, but in the church?
Yeah, I think we got to stick close to those. Protect, provide. I mean, a good protector. Yay, I'm ready to ward off a physical attacker, but that's not happening very often.
Sure,
a good protector, you know, is I got health insurance and medical insurance. That's good
that's
protection
good.
Right there.
I like that. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to switch gears. We're going to try to start closing out our podcast for today. I know we've had a little bit of technical issues, but that's fine. We've been blessed by the conversation that we've been able to have with you. But here's what we normally do in our podcast. We end with a just sort of a closing segment where, you know, we talk about different things, sort of off topic if we want to do that. But a segment today called Did You Know? And give us opportunity to ask a question and answer a question that most people may not know. And so we're just trying to throw some nuggets out there. And so I'm going to start with Micah. Micah, what do you – and then, John, I want to ask you – the same question, did you know? So, Micah, what do you got?
Well, since the episode is masculinity, I'm going to go down that track. And this is, there's nothing spiritual about what I'm about to say. Okay, just so, a little disclaimer there for those of you
that's
that care about this
know.
Stuff. But according to Men's Fitness Magazine, John, did you know the type of facial hair that women find most attractive? And Men's Fitness breaks it up in these three ways. For clean-shaven men, if a woman is looking for a man in a relationship, she's often looking for a clean-shaven man. But that also goes toward a one-night stand. So that's not really good strength, you know, for not having facial hair. Stubble was deemed to be the most overall attractive to women, except that was kind of in a short-term relationship. But for long-term covenantal commitment, they want a full beard. So, and didn't say anything about goatee, so I guess we're just out of the loop.
That's for you, man.
Now I know that.
now
I know that, and I was trying to think of this awesome did you know that, and I got swept away by yours. So I need to do something gunnish.
Yes.
So you know, Matt, Micah, did you know that with advances in handgun ammunition, hollow point rounds and stuff, you're getting expansion out of a 9mm to mimic just about the lethality of a 40 or a 45. And we found after two decades of gathering research from gunshot wounds that a 45 isn't really stopping a threat any more than a 40 cal or a 9mm. What matters is not the fallacy of stopping power per se. What it is the accuracy of the round. Meaning if you hit someone in the shoulder with a 45 and they're all beefed up on adrenaline, they may not realize that they've even been hit. It's not knocking you across the room. It's just poking a little hole in you that's slightly bigger than that of a 40 or a 9. Mm. But it's almost negligible with the expansion of the rounds, these hollow points. So you might as well have a 9 millimeter, which you can shoot faster and more accurately and carry more rounds. Mm. That's why the world is going 9 millimeter.
Wow. I did not know that.
If you have a 40 or 45, you don't have to trade it in. It's still a good gun. It'll get the job done, and all things remaining equal, 40-45 would be better. But the other variables that I mentioned, speed on target, accuracy, and increased round count, have the crushing majority of most current professionals flocking in droves toward 9mm.
Dude, this is epic. This is why we had you on this program today.
Good. Get a Glock 19.
Yes. Well, let me say this as well. Okay, so I was fresh out of seminary, so to speak, just kind of nerdy pastor type. John Lovell comes into my life through a series of providential events in the life of a connected friend that we had. And I was sans pistol. I had no guns, none. And John gave me my first handgun. It was actually a Sig Sauer 40 caliber, which I still love today. I still shoot today. And I like my 9mm too, bro, but that 40 is real special to me. So thank you.
That was before I knew what I knew. and when I gave that, it was my favorite gun in the world.
Oh, no.
It was my favorite pistol in the world, not favorite gun. My favorite gun in the world. Oh, that's hard.
Yeah, I'd like to know that. What is your favorite gun in the world?
Probably a Mark 19. It's an automatic grenade launcher.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't. It's not hand-holded. It's got to be mounted on. Or a minigun. Ah, Carl Gustav's an 84mm bullet. It's like an anti-tank recoilless rifle. There's too many good guns. I'm not going to answer. I'm not going to do it. Nope. Cool. You're not going to tie me down.
I'm not going to tie you down.
Nice try, Pastor. Nice try.
It was worth a try. all right. Well, I'm gonna close this out today. Thank you for listening to Gospel Rain podcast. John, it's been a blessing to have you on as our guest. Don't hang up the phone just yet, but I appreciate you being on with us today. And we encourage our listeners to be back with us next week on Gospel Rain. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel Rain podcast. We hope you've been encouraged today, and we pray the gospel will reign in your life this week. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or check out our website at gospelrain.com.